Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. The sun shines in New Mexico almost every day, distributing abundant energy for us to harness. How can individual and small consumers take advantage of this renewable resource for their energy needs? Today we'll be discussing what it takes to set up a solar power system for a home or small business. In addition to the environmental and societal benefits of alternative sustainable energy use, are there cost savings? How much money can we actually save over time? Joining me in the studio for today's discussion are Mark Geiser, Clean Energy Program Manager, Energy Conservation Division of the New Mexico Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resource Department, and Patrick Griebel, Renewable Energy Industries Association Board Member and Counsel. Joining us shortly by phone will be Sandra Begay-Campbell, Sandia National Laboratory's Technical Team Principal Member, who works with the DOE's Tribal Energy Program. Well, welcome to both of you, Mark and Patrick, and thank you for being here today.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for having us.
Good morning. And we have a lot of interest in this program today, so people are looking forward to hearing from all of you today. To participate in our program, email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Well, to begin, let's help our listeners get to know you a little bit and understand the breadth of experience that we have on this panel today. So, Mark Geiser, you work with the state's Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department. For how long have you been in the position of Clean Energy Program Manager?
I've joined the state in October of 2014. It's only about seven months I've been there. Prior to that, I worked for EMCOR here in Albuquerque for 6 years.
Now, tell us, EMCOR, people might know the name, but tell us a little bit about what EMCOR does.
When I was talking to people about EMCOR, when I worked for EMCOR, I told people that EMCOR is the company that affects so many people in New Mexico that they don't know about. EMCOR provided a lot of the fiber optic backbone infrastructure, so when you download a book or movie, it's probably transported over an EMCOR fiber system. The other side of it is EMCOR provides about half of the solar power systems for satellites that are in orbit. So you, if you look at weather information or look at other communication systems, that's being powered by EMCOR solar cells.
Now, in what other ways and positions have you been involved with solar power and for how long?
In EMCOR, I was in charge of the various field installations for their concentrating photovoltaic program that they had for a number of years. So I was installing CPV systems worldwide and looking at solar resources worldwide for their EMCOR.
And anything prior to that?
Prior to that, I was 20 years in the aerospace industry working with spacecraft power systems, all the various spacecraft power at the launch site and ground support power.
All right, so Patrick Griebel, tell us about the Renewable Energy Industries Association, of which you are a board member and serve as counsel.
Sure. The Renewable Energy Industries Association, or REIA as we refer to the acronym, that's an association that is composed primarily of solar installers throughout the state of New Mexico. Excuse me. And originally, you know, it would encompass all of the renewable energy technologies that were out there. The reality is in the last 10 years or so, solar, photovoltaic, and thermal have really been the ones that have risen to the top as feasible technology. So our membership is composed almost entirely of solar installers.
And tell us about you've had a history of association with solar power. So tell us about those associations and connections, please,
sure.
Patrick.
Sure. I've been in the practice of law for a little over a decade now, and I was at a fairly large law firm in the mid-2000s, but I've always been interested in solar technology. And so I decided to start a solar company in 2007. That was 310 Solar. And left the firm eventually and have worked with several solar companies throughout that time frame. And it just sort of dumb luck, which is sort of the story of my life. I was in the right place at the right time because that's exactly when the technology really started to get economically feasible. So we saw the market explode. I'd love to take some credit for it, but I think I was just caught the wave at the right time.
All right. Well, Sandra Begay-Campbell, I understand you're with us on the telephone this morning.
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Well, thank you for joining us. So please tell us about your work for Sandia National Labs and the DOE's Tribal Energy Program as it relates to solar power. For how long have you been working as a consultant on solar power issues?
Well, part of my role from Sandia is a government-to-government relationship between the tribes of the United States and the Department of Energy, so the federal government. I've been working in this particular area for about 13 years. It's been one of the more fun jobs that I've had, really interacting with people who want to solve problems using technology. So the biggest issue in many rural areas in New Mexico, but particularly for some tribes, is trying to get some power off grid. And there's a little bit of movement with some of the more urban tribes to look at net metering and putting on solar panels that might give them a little bit of payback for generating their own solar electricity through on-grid type of technology. But it's been good to talk to those who are trying to address some of the challenges in rural areas for tribes. It may be unelectrified homes, residential units, and that's where I got my start.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you is, on tribal lands, what form have solar power systems taken?
So I got my start 13 years ago in helping the Navajo Nation. They had received some federal funding through Senator Bingaman to try to help solve a large problem with 13,000 unelectrified homes within the Navajo Nation. And one of the viable options was to use off-grid solar panels. So very small units, were just a couple panels. We're talking only 220 watts per day with a little battery system. And this was basically just for rural Navajo elders to have some lights in their house. And as time developed, they began to develop a little bit larger system over time. So right now they've got about 880 watt per day fielded systems that are hybrids. And part of that evolution was trying to support the utilities work within the tribe to understand how do you evolve from use of PV to better batteries to a system and adding a small wind turbine to the system.
And is there an application to urban and semi-rural environments with this technology that's been developed out there?
Well, part of it is learning how to work with solar as a system. So I think part of where everybody who's in solar has to come back to remember, it's not just the panels. You have to have the other pieces that make up a system. So a lot of what I do is education. How does solar work? How would you put together a system? What is the use? And the common question is, well, I have this size house. How many panels do I need? And I always say it depends, because you have to know what is the building being used for, or how big is the home, how many users. Going back to that energy use, and then we always start off with energy efficiency and conservation.
All right. Well, before we dig into some specifics about setting up systems, let's stay with you and Patrick and Mark here right now. Why do we want to avail ourselves of solar power system? What are the benefits? And Patrick, let's begin with you. What are the benefits? Why do we want them?
Sure. Well, you know, obviously, the scientists are 97% agreed that we've got a pretty serious problem facing us with climate change, and that's what motivated me to get into the business in the first place. I just felt that while government certainly has its place, and we couldn't do it without the good folks in the state and federal government, if you look at human history, the real innovations have come through business. You know, we're sitting here with iPhones not because the government said, you know, we really need to have smartphones in everybody's hand. So that's why I got into the technology, and so I think that's one of the primary reasons. But that's also a very polarizing topic for some, and I found that the way we sort of avoid that polarizing conversation is to talk about the financial performance of solar. So that's where we usually lead in the industry. We talk about how you can save money every month. To Ms. Begay's Campbell's point, you know, it just depends on the size of the system. But the one thing I try to make people remember is, regardless of the system size, the system, if properly sized, is going to cash flow. In other words, you're going to have money left over every month after you pay for the equipment. So that's the primary reason, but recognizing that that's not necessarily the only reason that you would want to get into solar.
And Mark, let's go to you. What are the, you know, taking what Patrick said into consideration, what are some other benefits of solar? Why do we want to avail ourselves of solar power?
I'd like to just second Patrick's comment on economics. I mean, this last year, 2014, solar was announced at Solar Power International as being the tipping point year, where you can install solar for less than the cost of grid power in a lot of locations. And that there was another paper I was just looking at last night. But anyway, Mexico was one of the 21 states where solar power makes sense just on economic terms, where the payback is less than 10 years. That's better than the stock market. I mean, and the panels will last most likely 20 years. There are 25-year warranties out there. You pay for the panels for the first 10 years, and from then on, it's basically electricity is delivered free to your door every day.
And Sandra Begay Campbell, what do you see as the benefits of solar power? Why do we want to avail ourselves of the power of the sun and harness it?
You know, part of it is in a long-term look. You've got it for tribes. In my experience, they're going to be around for hundreds of years, and that's how they think about their plans for the future. So they want to keep their environment clean. They want to protect it for future generations. So the whole connection between very clean energy that has no emissions is what's appealing about solar. You're using a natural resource, using technology, and making that into something useful for everyday life. So that's sort of why you use natural resources that are available to then get electricity.
You know, and some of the other things I read about in preparing for the program were, you know, how it protects cities who have where there are disasters. You know, they don't have to depend upon other forms of power. If the grid goes down, there might be stored energy. Solar power is at its peak when demand is highest for power. On the sunny days. So lots of good reasons. Now, we're going to dig into the specifics. But before we do, and we go to our first break, let's bring in our caller, Jan, who has a specific question that maybe our panel can answer here. So good morning, Jan. Thank you for joining us.
Hi there. Great show. I've been off-grid for 20 years, and I love it. We've had experience where a neighbor called and said, I don't have any electricity. And it's like, well, we do. The grid went down. Too bad for you. But I have heard recently, as have my neighbors, many of us are on solar where I live, out west of Mountain Air, and have heard rumor that there is likely to be some taxation on those of us who are off-grid. And it seems because we're not buying electricity, there's some people that are upset about that, and they want to tax us. And I was wondering if anyone on your panel has heard anything about that type of legislation, maybe? I'm not sure where the rumor's coming from, but several people have heard it and have mentioned it. And I was wondering if anybody there could speak to that.
All right, Jan, thanks for calling. And Patrick Griebel, you have some information on that?
Jan, is your system completely off-grid, or are you what they call
I'm totally off-grid. I didn't want to do that tie-in thing. Plus,
okay.
Where my house is, I was 3/4 of a mile from the closest electric line, and the rural electric co-op was going to charge me $20,000 to $30,000 to bring electricity to me. And it's like, no, I don't think so. So I spent it on a solar system. No, I do not have grid tie-in.
Jan, and for the listeners who maybe aren't totally familiar with how solar technology works, there's grid tied, which means you are still connected to the grid, and that has a lot of advantages. And 98% of the systems that get installed in New Mexico anyway are grid tied. Jan is one of the ones who is completely off the grid and does not rely on the power company or the co-op at all for any energy. So what you're probably hearing about are some of the regulatory filings that PNM has made up at the Public Regulatory Commission, where they are seeking to impose a monthly fee on solar users.
Who are on the grid, though?
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Correct. So if you're not tied into any power company, either a co-op or in this case PNM, there would be no mechanism to tax you for it, and there's certainly no no legislation I've ever heard of that would tax solar, and I can't imagine this administration ever approving anything like that. And of course, we'd fight it tooth and nail as well. So, Jan, you can turn on your TV with your solar power there and rest easy that I don't think that's happening.
All right, Jan, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for calling today. We're talking about small-scale or solar power systems. I'm joined by Patrick Griebel, Renewable Energy Industries Association board member and counsel, by Sandra Begay-Campbell, Sandia National Laboratories Technical Team Principal Member, working with the DOE's Tribal Energy Program, and Mark Geiser, Clean Energy Program Manager, Energy Conservation Division of the New Mexico Energy Minerals and Natural Resources Department. If you'd like to join in our conversation, please call us at 277-5866, that's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, have you found a way to use our abundant solar energy for your power needs? What is your experience with solar power? We'll be back with you after this short break.
Need a new home for that gently used couch? Upgrading a bathroom? Restore has it all, from building supplies to home furnishings. Restore purchases and donations have built 175 homes for low-income families in Albuquerque. Shop Habitat for Humanity Restore, 4900 Manal, west of San Mateo, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. For large donation pickup, call 265-0057. A message from the tax-exempt Greater Albuquerque Habitat for Humanity.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, a lively and thoughtful debate on this question: love or fear? Which motivates us more?
Love creates spaces of safety. When you're loved, you can explore, you can create, you can find things, make things new.
I have a fear that I'm going to be remembered for bad things, or that I won't be remembered at all. And that fear drives almost everything that goes on in my life.
That's next time on Peace Talks Radio, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about small-scale solar, and we've got a lot of calls lined up. But before we jump to those calls, let's discuss, as promised, we can at least start here, how to set up a solar power system for homes and small businesses. So my question, and let's start with you, Mark, what are the choices for a consumer who wants to set up a solar power system? Are there choices? Must a consumer deal with a utility company or not? And I think we heard from Jan that you don't have to. But when a consumer is out there or a small business looking to set up, what are their choices? Self-contained systems, or what do they need to do?
It's basically based upon their desires. The most inexpensive systems are basically the grid-tied systems with the utilities. Those systems are fairly inexpensive these days, and the price is still going down. So I do want to recommend for the listeners that they need to understand the systems. They need to educate themselves a little bit.
Are there materials that on the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department website that can help to educate them?
We have some. There are other websites out there that probably do a better job than us. The New Mexico Solar Energy Association has a much better list of materials on their website. Education is important. There's a lot of terms of art or other terms in the industry that you need to understand in order to make an informed decision about how you move forward.
All right, Patrick, you just want to add something quickly about...
Sure. I mean, I would say that, obviously my background is with the industry side. So I think Mark's website is a great one. New Mexico Solar Energy Association is a great one to get educated. But, put these companies to work. If you're interested in doing it, have them give you a quote. Get a couple of them. I was general manager at Affordable Solar. And the good companies are going to break this out for you and show you exactly how it works and exactly how the finances work.
And walk you through it all.
That's
okay,
right.
Let's go ahead and bring in Lars from Albuquerque, who has a little bit of a different question about it, about self-installation and other questions. So, Lars, thanks for joining our conversation. Good morning.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Let me introduce you. I'm an electrical engineer,
okay.
And I installed a 4 kilowatt system on my house in about 2009, and so I'm a big proponent. It's been working great. Now, I recently wanted to install another solar system on a house that I own, and I discovered that I couldn't get the permit, and I discovered that it is now basically illegal for a homeowner to do a self-install. They cannot get the permits to do it. And I'm wondering, where did that come from? You know, what is driving that? Because I want to install solar. I got some quotes from some companies. And, you know, I think they want a way too much money for what they're doing, you know, for getting the permits, for hooking up the electrical and stuff.
All right, well, let's address that. I know you have another part, but let's address that self-installation part. Patrick, you want to?
Sure. You know, I have obviously a little bit different take on that, and you're an electrical engineer, so you're obviously, you know, less than 1% of the folks who are interested in solar. I don't know if Lars has got some background noise there, but so, you know, you're probably a different case, but certainly being a practicing attorney and a solar guy, I don't recommend that folks do either one of those themselves, because there's a lot of ways you can go wrong. And the costs are just so much lower now than even 2009. I mean, the prices have probably fallen another 50% since you first installed that system. So, you know, I'm sure you would need an electrical license to be able to install it. I know there's exceptions in the code for being your own general contractor. You know, you can build your own house, but there you're using trades and professionals who in turn have licenses for electricity or plumbing and whatnot. So I think you'd still need an electrical license to install a solar
electric system. Can I make a comment?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, you know, a homeowner can get a homeowner's permit to do anything electrical on their house. They can install an electrical service entrance. They can do anything electrical on the house. The only things that a homeowner cannot do on their house is they cannot do gas plumbing, they cannot do HVAC, so duct work. And the new addition is they now cannot connect an inverter. And if you can install an electrical service entrance, which is the main electrical power into your house, but they won't let you, you know, connect an electrical appliance to your system. I was told I couldn't even put an outlet plug on it, and I couldn't plug it into the outlet. I don't really look at this as a safety issue. You know, you can do everything else except you can't install the inverter.
Now, are you being told that that's an illegality? And Patrick or Mark, is it illegal to install an inverter, or is it just a difficult thing to do? Patrick?
I think it's probably going to vary by jurisdiction. I mean, there's probably 15 different jurisdictions that a solar company in New Mexico has to deal with. There's a state, there's counties, there's cities. So it would just kind of depend on the jurisdiction, but it's a pretty niche question, because most folks are not interested in dealing with DC electricity, which is you know, obviously a very dangerous form of electricity.
And Lars, I'm going to say goodbye to you. I'm going to talk about your second part of your question right now with our guest. But thank you for calling this morning. And
okay.
And the answer is jurisdiction to jurisdiction. You'll have to check out the vagaries. Yes. Go ahead, Mark.
This is Mark. My comment is that for the safety of everyone, electrical utility workers and the homeowner and whoever else works around the system, I would recommend at least having a licensed electrician do the final connections of the system, just as a good safety check. And that's my comment.
All right. Well, let's move to Lars. Had a second question, and we let him go because we can ask this amongst ourselves here. And Mark, one of the main things you deal with on for the department are the tax incentives.
That's correct.
And so Lars's question was, what about the expiration of the tax incentives? And we saw that some things are going to expire. There's a sunset clause on the state's tax incentive, and I believe on the federal tax incentive as well. So what are you hearing about that?
Presently, how the law is set up is that the New Mexico State tax credit, it's called the Solar Market Development Tax Credit, will expire on December 31st, 2016.
Now, there was a bill this session to delay that expiration, was there not?
That is correct.
And it got pocket vetoed.
That is
correct.
Okay.
All right. So that's the situation as stands. So now what about the federal incentive?
Federal credits are also scheduled to sunset on December 31st, 2016 also. So there is an opportunity, though, going forward with Congress. There's at least another year that they could consider extending those or modifying them.
So then my question becomes, is right now, the present time, a good time to install a solar power system? Or given even that these tax incentives are going to expire, are there technological advances that will both reduce system and installation costs and allow for more efficient energy use that will come to market in the near future? Or is now the time? And Patrick, you want to jump in?
Sure. Now's a great time. Now has always been a great time. But the situation becomes more dire as we head into the next year. And dire is probably not the right word. I mean, more urgent, I would say, because you have a lack of certainty going beyond 2016. The federal tax credit may well disappear, and that's a 30%. That's 30% of the system cost. So if you can imagine just taking that 30% and coming out of your pocket with it instead of getting a tax credit on that. The state tax credit is 10%, and that's currently set to sunset as well. So, you could be looking at a total of a 40% swing. And the thing that folks need to keep in mind is that it takes time to get these systems permitted, designed. A lot of these companies have significant backlogs. When I left Affordable Solar, we had a two-month backlog of jobs that had to go in. So don't wait until the last minute, and now is a great time. We're heading into the part of the season where the days are getting longer, so you end up saving more money in the spring, summer, and fall than in the winter.
Well, before we go to cost issues, Sandra Begay Campbell, over the 13 years that you have been working with solar power systems, have technological changes been overwhelming, or has the basic system remained the same? Can we expect any technological advances in the future?
Well, from the national type of research that's being done, they're trying to push the cost down. So anything down from the materials and the different type of solar panels that are available, you saw a huge decrease in price from the thin films, and that may be from imports from China or other countries of solar panels that use a thinner type of material, but you need more square footage to get the amount of electricity out of those type of panels. And then there's been some advances in inverters. The advances that I haven't seen like I would like to see are in the battery storage and improving batteries. But, the models I know from the tribal utilities is they've compared the lead-acid batteries with the what they call maintenance-free. So they are finding better service and hardier results from the tried-and-true lead-acid versus the new kind of sealed batteries that do not last as long. But it does come back to the user and how much you abuse those batteries if you do have storage.
Well, let's bring in Jason from Santa Fe, and it could be that his question was partially answered, but let's bring this home by bringing him in. Good morning, Jason. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call.
Sure. Yeah,
absolutely, a bit of the comments just made certainly fill out a little bit of my question. In essence, 5 or 6 years ago, I looked at getting a system for my home installed, and I had a consultant come over, and we looked at the installation and equipment costs. And then on my own, I just ran some very rudimentary analysis on it, and then just with the idea of if the equipment gets incrementally better each year, and if it gets better in yield, so to speak, or generating more power, and if the price drops incrementally each year for that equipment, in looking at those changes, I just kind of projected it out, and I thought, wow, it doesn't take a big adjustment in either one of those things for it to look like I should just keep waiting for the technology to improve from year to year. And so just, with this morning's show, always interested in solar power, and certainly it makes sense in a place like New Mexico, Southwest, but just was curious, where that stands, if my analysis is correct. And again, the comments earlier sounded like they addressed some of it.
All right, let's see if we have more to add to fill it out. Mark, you want to add anything? Thanks so much, Jason, for calling.
I would suggest you don't wait. The technology will continue to change. It'll continue to change at a rapid rate, but you're also losing out the benefits that you could have right now. Put a small system in, get it working for you. If you like it, you can add to it. You can always increase it and expand it. You can tailor your expenses or your cost to the system as you go forward. The other thing that Patrick didn't notice about the sunset was that the present PNM rate case has talked about increasing fees for the solar energy installations. All systems installed before January 1st, 2016 will be grandfathered in without those fees.
Well, so we don't know that's a certainty yet, right?
It's not a certainty.
Okay, but it's out there looming.
But since it takes 4 to 6 months to get a system contracted and installed, you don't want to be filing, connecting your system on January 2nd of 2016 and find out that you're no longer grandfathered and PNM was able to press forward with the rate case.
Well, you know, we say do it now, but are there large upfront costs? I mean, do you have to lay out $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, or can you do something more cheaply? Can you finance a system? Tell us a little bit about that, Patrick.
Sure. And then I would like to circle back to Jason's point. But the reality with solar is that, you know, once people take a look at something, they sort of get an idea in their head of what they looked at. And in a lot of cases, there was a big buzz around solar in the 2008 timeframe. So a lot of folks went out and got quotes. Well, you know, guess what? The prices are half, if not even less, than what they were then. I'm looking at a quote here for about a 5 kilowatt system.
Is that a typical?
That's a typical array, and a kilowatt just is a reference of how much the system puts out when the sun is shining, you know, in full phase. So a 5 kilowatt system, without getting too technical here, that's roughly an average system, and the upfront on that is just under $18,000, and that's before any of the tax credits, anything. And you know, when I started in this business just 5-6 years ago, that was a $40,000 system. It's now $18,000 system. So to tie, and yes, there are lots of finance mechanisms, and we should probably talk about some of those at some point here this morning. But the one piece of Jason's equation that's missing is what's happening while you're waiting. Well, you're mailing off a check every month for, you know, some of us, you know, some folks get bills in the several hundred dollar range for larger homes during the summer months, especially. So that's money that could have been going towards your payback. If you had installed a system in 2008, 2009, even with the higher installation cost, that system would be paid for largely now. If you waited, you know, you're starting over. And all the benefits are starting to decrease. Yes, the costs are coming down, but so are the benefits, like the amount that the utility pays you for every kilowatt hour you generate on your own. That is plummeted. That's going to disappear within a matter of months. And it used to be 13 cents per kilowatt hour when I started.
But now people are hearing things are going to change. Things are going to change. These incentives are disappearing. Will people who act now be grandfathered in, or might the situation change distinctly for anybody who acts now even?
No, you would be grandfathered in even by PNM's current access fee proposal. They're not proposing that existing customers would have to pay that fee.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in another caller to our conversation today with a little bit of a different question. It's Isaac from Albuquerque. Good morning, Isaac.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was curious about, I guess, the environmental impact of manufacturing solar panels. I feel like I read somewhere a while back that stated there's, I don't know if it's rare minerals or certain elements that were needed to manufacture the panels had an important, I guess, environmental risk. And I was wondering if anybody could speak to that, if they have any information.
All right. Thanks so much for calling this morning, Isaac. And Sandra Begay-Campbell, before I get you to answer, I do want to point out we have a number of links on our Call-In Show webpage, and including one from Media Matters that seeks to dispel some myths about solar power. So there might be some information there that you can use also, Isaac, to fill things in. But Sandra, talk to us a little bit about the environmental consequences of manufacturing. I'm sure this is something that the tribes and native peoples have considered.
They have, but from the research side of Department of Energy solar program, that's been part of their dialogue on how do you deal with the end stages of technology such as solar panels. So part of that is trying to do as much recycling and take some of the materials out if possible. And then the other is any manufacturing, you also have to consider the waste. They call it the cycle of the product. So, yeah, there are discussions and hopefully some more innovative ways to think about that. But many of the answers may be reuse or repurposing parts of the system itself. And the other is trying to understand how do you really take care of that system once you've made an investment so that you can get the longevity or good use of that system for as long as possible. So that's part of what we talked about, the users not abusing that system. And I'm talking about a little bit of off-grid and those who will have battery storage. But part of that, too, is people say it's maintenance-free. It is, but you do need to wash off those panels and no shading. That just doesn't help the panel perform. And in some cases, if you have shading on a part of that panel, it can have effects to the entire system where it's not, they call it optimized or used at the best that it can be when there is no shading.
Now, what about the use of precious materials in the panels? Is that and the mining of that, or the, you know, getting it from places, all those things? Is there any concern, environmental concern, with that?
There are, but the others, many of other products that use silicon for wafers or microchips have the same issue to deal with. So it's a bigger discussion, not just for solar, but for other industries.
Okay. Mark, anything you want to add about Jason's question to environmental consequences of manufacturing, or Patrick, either one of you? Yeah, Mark.
I was just going to say that most of the manufacturers do have recycling programs in place. You have to specify what type of panels. Obviously, some of the panel materials that are used out there are more toxic than or would be more toxic in a waste stream than others. But those manufacturers have a really good recycling program.
We had a number of callers who, not even callers, listeners, and prior to the program, who wrote in, and one of the major questions that people were asking about, and let's just go ahead and dig into this a little more, is would access fees like the one PNM has proposed put a big dent in the benefits of a solar system on a house? And Patrick, what's your thought on that?
It would, and if I could just jump back really quickly to the prior point, you know, that's an interesting argument that the fossil fuel community comes up with. They take it completely out of context and say, well, creating a solar panel has an environmental impact. Sure, you know, driving my car here this morning had an environmental impact, although I did drive an electric car. The question is, compared to what? I mean, if you're going to build a coal-fired power plant, setting aside the fact that solar uses no fuel and that coal-fired power plant's going to be spewing carbon and all sorts of other wonderful things for the next 30, 40 years, the creation, the construction of that plant has an environmental impact. So do all the equipment that goes in there. And if you compare that to solar equipment, I'd bet on solar any day there. And then when you add in 30, 40 years of fuel-free operation for solar, I'm sure that the carbon footprint is a mere fraction of that coal-fired power plant.
We're talking today about small-scale solar power systems. I'm joined by Sandra Begay-Campbell, Sandia National Laboratory's Technical Team Principal Member, working with the DOE's Tribal Energy Program, by Mark Geiser, Clean Energy Program Manager with the New Mexico Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department, and Patrick Griebel, Renewable Energy Industries Association Board Member and Counsel. Join our conversation at 277-5866 or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Share with us. Are you considering installing a solar power system? What are your considerations? We'll be back with you after this short break.
Have you been planning to donate that old car or truck to KUNM but just haven't gotten around to it? Well, this is the perfect time. Because if you call today, we can tow it away, sell it, and get the proceeds in before the fiscal year ends June 30th. That old car or truck could be just the thing that pushes KUNM's budget into the black. So please don't wait. Call 888-KUNM-CAR today. That's 888-586-6227, and thanks.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next motion up for debate.
Yes or no to this statement. Abolish the death penalty.
The death penalty should be abolished because it fails to enhance public safety.
The death penalty does not deter.
We should kill for one reason and one reason only. In one word, justice.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about small-scale solar power systems. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or on Twitter at KUNM News. Let me go ahead and read an email comment from Ed. He installed a system with Positive Energy Solar in 2011 and says it was one of the best decisions he ever made. He says he thinks most companies will give a free estimate. And Patrick, you're with the Association of Renewable Energy Industries. And is that accurate? Will people give a free estimate?
Absolutely. They'll take a look at your usage and tell you why they're recommending a certain system. It usually comes down to your historical usage, but they'll explain how all of that works, usually do an in-home visit. So it's a very thorough process. If nothing else, you know, it's free and educational, so there's no reason not to do it.
Is there anything that people need to do to be prepared for that free estimate?
The best thing they can do is just get, especially if they're in the PNM service territory, just take a bill, any bill. It's got that little bar chart at the top. That's all the installer needs, because that shows your usage month by month, and they just plug that into a system sizing tool, which will allow them to tell you what size system they're going to recommend and what it'll cost and what are all the tax benefits and usage benefits and all that.
So. All right. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Phil from Santa Fe. Good morning, Phil, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning. I was going to comment that the cheapest solar that you can get is the solar that you don't have to buy, and that conservation is extremely important in sizing a system. Like, if you live in town and you're 5 minutes away from the grocery store, do you really need a 24 cubic foot refrigerator and that sort of thing? And, of course, resistance heating is most inefficient use of electricity as well. So, you know, if you can get gas stoves instead of electric, that's certainly a plus.
All right. Thanks.
I left a comment on Facebook as well. So, anyway, I appreciate the show. It's a great show.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks so much for calling. And up on our webpage, we do have a link to the New Mexico Solar Energy Association's how-to guide for solar. And one of the first things that they say is, make your house, before you do this, make your house as energy efficient as possible. So echoing what Phil had to say, but I had a question about that guide is from 2007. And Sandra, I know you may not be familiar specifically with that guide, but would a guide from 2007 for how to go about making a house or a small business using a solar power system, would that still be relevant, or have things changed enough that maybe we don't want to point people to that how-to guide from 2007.
No, I think all of that's very relevant. I think the only, because my husband and I have reduced our energy load, we have bought more LED type of products for bulbs, and we're seeing more on the market. When we first were looking for LED bulbs, we were having to do things online through China to get one little tiny bulb. And it seems as though the market is having more availability of different size LED lights. The price has come down somewhat. I think people really think that LED bulbs are too expensive, but when you do the side-by-side comparison of the old type of bulbs versus the compact fluorescents to an LED, there's a dramatic change in the use, minimal power from LEDs. And the other is the intensity of the light has changed from those LEDs. So some people try to dismiss LEDs if they're too expensive, but if you really dove into the calculations, you would see how much difference you would make. If you would try an LED, I think you'd be very satisfied, and you might put in a lot more. And I've seen different kinds. There's even the type that can replace the fluorescent type of tube that are made up of little LED lights. So I have those in my kitchen right now.
All right. Mark, you want to add something?
I was just going to reemphasize adding efficiency measures to your house before you consider solar is still probably the best value for the dollar at the moment. And again, you can buy LED light bulbs off the shelf right now. And, they only consume less than 8% of what an incandescent bulb will consume. So that's and if you've got a porch light that runs 24/7, that's a very good use for an LED light bulb, and it'll reduce your power consumption significantly.
Now, one of the things I want to mention, and I believe I mentioned we had great interest even prior to this show, people writing in about things that were happening, and I don't know if we're going to get a call from the people from Flying Star, but yesterday they unveiled solar power charging stations for computers and phones in their operations. So there are lots of things afoot, and these are all of a piece. So I just do want to mention that for people. I do want to read an email comment from Nick. Nick asks, what about systems where a company owns the solar system and the rates have increases built in that would result in a homeowner paying upwards of $100,000 for a $30,000 to $40,000 system? Is anyone addressing predatory lending around solar systems? Patrick, you want to jump in?
You know, there's a lot of financial vehicles that are out there now. We had a great product with the credit union. There's a couple different credit unions that do a solar loan. And I'm not sure where he's getting his numbers, but I'm assuming he's referring to the fact that once you pay interest on a loan for a number of years, you're going to pay more.
Like a mortgage on a house.
Sure,
right?
I guess you could say my mortgage on my house is predatory and my car and everything else. But I think the definition of predatory is interest rates, something 20, 30% higher than that. I don't think.
And there are usury laws in the state that prevent that.
All of the products that we used, including the solar lease, if you look at an annual, sort of convert that into what it would be as an annual interest rate were it a loan, all of them are in the 6 to no more than 10% rate. You know, it's just a question of whether or not you want to write a check for it up front or whether you would rather finance it. And I think a lot of people choose to finance it. The lease is even easier because there's no upfront cost, and the maintenance of the system is somebody else's problem for the however long the lease runs. Most of them are 20 to 25 years. So in 12, 13 years when that inverter goes bad or if anything else happens, you make one phone call and somebody else comes and takes care of it.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring in Gabriel. He's got a specific equipment question. It sounds like he's been considering a system. So, Gabriel, thanks for joining us, and I hope our guests can address your question. Good morning.
Good morning. I am considering solar and have had a couple of quotes. One company uses string inverters. The other uses microinverters, and fairly knowledgeable about the differences, but I was wondering if your panel had a recommendation.
All right, let's turn that to them. Mark?
I would have no recommendation to either one. In my data that I look at, the microinverters have taken over probably about half of the market in New Mexico. So there's a lot of microinverters going in out there. The downside typically is that they are on the hot side of the roof and potential for not maximizing your power may or may not be there.
And Sandra, any input on a microinverter versus a string inverter?
No, I think just trying to get some answers from the vendor and help them do their sales job as comparing between the alternatives that you have. Because I think, you know, they're trying to give you a product that's going to work. So ask as many questions as you can, because that is their job as they're selling to give you the information.
Patrick, you want to add anything
sure.
to that?
Sure. I mean, a lot of the companies that offer microinverters will sometimes give you a side-by-side quote, a string inverter versus a microinverter. And I don't personally think there's a wrong answer there. I personally prefer the microinverter simply because it allows you to sort of optimize the performance of each panel. And most of those inverters have a warranty themselves of 20 to 25 years, which is unlike a string inverter. They're warrantied for 10 years typically. And you will replace an inverter sometime during that 25, 30-year period. So you're sort of building in that warranty cost of having that done for free. The other nice thing about microinverters is that, you know, you can look on your phone and see how the whole system is doing because they're all monitored through a web portal. And string inverters as well, but there's some additional equipment you need to get to do that, whereas the microinverter, that comes standard. So it's kind of six one, half dozen the other. They're a little more expensive, a little bit more expensive, maybe 5-10%, but in my view, they're worth it. But again, no wrong answers there.
All right, we have a couple of questions from Nellie, who's reached out to us on email. How does PNM's grid tie system work? Is it credit-based? Is there a monthly base fee? Anybody want to address that? Patrick, you again?
Sure. You're tied into their system, and they do offer what's called a REC, or Renewable Energy Certificate. So that's a certain amount of money they pay for every kilowatt hour that system generates. And currently, I think that's down to something like 2 cents or something like that. So it's not as much of a factor as it used to be. the real benefit of a grid-tied solar system, sort of going back to Phil's point, is the value of the energy you never buy from PNM or any other utility. If you're generating it yourself, then it's worth whatever the going rate is. And for a residential user in the PNM service territory, that's, you know, upwards of 13 to as much as 20 cents per kilowatt hour at those higher tiers, whereas that used to be 8 or 9 cents, you know, even 6 years ago. So that benefit is really what's taken over. It's called net metering. That's the real benefit of solar.
And that the question about whether there's a monthly base fee, Mark, that has to do with the proposed access fee, does it not?
I believe that's what the reference was to.
All right. So. Well, let's, you know, we always say to people, we'll get to a lot. There'll be a lot we don't get to. Sandra Begay Campbell, let's begin with you. What do you want people to know about solar? As we leave this program today, you see there are a lot of specific questions, and there was such great interest in this program. What, you've been working with solar for 13 years. What do you want people to know about it, and what actions would you suggest they take?
Well, I think part of it is knowing that the technical pieces are available. There's good companies in New Mexico. I think the society within the state that's supporting solar has been very active. Don't let that fear of a system keep you from looking at it. Have somebody walk you through it. Really take that initiative. It's straightforward. I do a lot of teaching of how that works. Just get over that fear of it. But the other is, the upfront cost, really think about that you're just paying now, but it's going to save you in the long run. And there's ways to look at that through calculations, but I think we've talked about that in the show today. There's a couple of deadlines coming up for these incentives that will go away at the end of 2016. So if you're sitting there on the fence and don't know where to go, I think that may push you over to use those incentives while they're there and really utilize, I think, a wonderful sunshine in New Mexico. It's enchanting to use our natural resources to give yourself the power you need for your own home.
And Mark Geiser, you're with the state, and there are certain things that people can apply for through the state. Is that the first step they take, or you're sort of on the back end? And what else do you want to suggest to people?
The application for the New Mexico Solar Tax Credit is a very high hurdle process. It takes about 10 pieces of documentation. Typically, the installers that have installed quite a few systems will help their clients with that process. It is a back-end process. We need the signed interconnect agreement with utility as the final piece. I do want to encourage all the installers and clients to please get your applications in early this year. Don't wait until November, because right now all the forecast is that we have a limit on the amount of credit we can issue each year, and our projection is that by November the credit available for 2015 will be issued.
Okay, and Patrick Ruppel, you're going to get the last words in here. What do you want to say to people as we close our program today?
You know, this is a great technology. Makes a lot of sense. Get informed about PNM's proposal. We didn't get to talk to it much about it today, but get informed about that access fee. You can follow Renewable Energy Industries Association on Facebook or any of these other organizations, but that basically changes the proposition from a winning proposition to a losing proposition. So PNM knew exactly what they were doing with that.
Can people make comments currently to the Public Regulation Commission on that, or no? That right now it's just an education phase.
No, they need to call their PRC commissioner and let them know that they oppose the access fee, if in fact they oppose it.
All right. Thanks to our guests, Sandia National Lab, Sandra Begay Campbell, Renewable Energy Industries Association board member and counsel Patrick Griebel, and Mark Geiser, Clean Energy Program Manager with the Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department. You can find a podcast of this and other KUNM call-in shows online at kunm.org. Jefferson White has engineered our show today. Kaveh Movahed is our assistant producer. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo, that is. This is the KUNM call-in show on 89.9 KUNM, broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico.